Hi, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of the IAC podcast. I'm Ohad Meislish, and today I'm honored to have Sundar Subramanian from Progress. Hi, Sundar, how are you?
I'm good, Ohad. Good to have this conversation. Thanks for the invite.
Our pleasure. Sundar, tell us a bit about yourself and about your company, please.
Sure. First, about myself, more than 20 years ago, I started as a developer. I used to write web services management code for web apps that were deployed in WebLogic, WebSphere kind of application servers, and used to manage them through JMX and then reflect the status on network system management systems like OpenView, Tivoli, or CA UniCenter. And then over the years, I did a startup, sold it to Salesforce, was there around the Heroku acquisition, saw that as one of the initial PaaS systems, which got recognized as in a bigger way. And then later on worked in an infra management company. We managed more than 10 million plus devices around the world, not just endpoint systems like laptops, desktops, servers, and network systems, but also credit card machines, point of sale devices, ATMs, printers, scanners, all kinds of things like that. And now for the last 5.5 years or so, I'm part of Progress Software. Progress is a 40-year-old listed company here in US, roughly $1 billion in revenue, 40% operating margin. And what we do is we make software products, we innovate in that space, and then we acquire companies, run them efficiently, and make sure that we support our customers really well. And that's what we do here at Progress.
This is awesome. So today definitely want to talk about infrastructure management and the different aspects and the journey of the DevOps / infra / cloud engineers in the last decade or so. So for those who are not aware, Progress also acquired a relevant company in the space that is very adjacent to the infrastructure as code space. And I'm talking about Chef Configuration Management. Can you talk a bit more about that acquisition?
Sure. Progress right now has different business units. I lead one of the business unit called as Infra Management, which has broadly four products. Chef, we'll talk a bit more in detail about that, but also WhatsApp Gold, which is a typical network system management product through the Ipswitch acquisition of 2019. And then Kemp, LoadMaster, and Flowmon, which is in WAF global scale load balancing and NetOps, NetSecOps, NDR space called Flowmon. And Chef, of course, the acquisition happened in middle of COVID in 2020. We did the whole thing remotely. And we were very happy and I would say filled with responsibility when we did the acquisition because we saw Chef start off many years ago as an open source project. Many tools got developed and eventually it became a series of products under the Chef brand name. And we saw the power of the community as well, where the usage was driven largely by the practitioner. Typically, practitioners would use it, adopt it in a company, and when their IT teams came to know about it, they would turn to getting an enterprise or commercial version of the software. And that gave us an opportunity to work with the open source community, fund them at the right level to make sure that projects are not abandoned or left with less investment, and then invest in moving a lot of work from typical configuration management, provisioning to security compliance, which is where a lot of the customers were asking for features. And over the last 3 years, we have seen that borne fruit. We have seen the community engage with us in a very, very realistic and meaningful manner through the contributions. And we have engaged with the community, but also with the users and customers. And that has given us a chance to work through with the customer base and make sure that the needs of the customers are met and satisfied, which is the primary role of a company like Progress.
This is awesome. So, you know, you're both like a head of BU in a big company, and also you were like a hands-on practitioner in the past. Can you tell us from both perspectives, what have you seen evolving in the space from the perspective of the practitioner? Like what I should do in order to be a successful practitioner 10 years ago versus what I should do in order to be a successful practitioner today, in your point of view?
I understand. Let me take a step back. 20 years ago, what we call today as DevOps practitioners used to look at log files of application servers, understand when an incident has happened, and they would interpret what has happened and what is the impact on the application, right? And then the build systems and others were still getting matured. I would say 10 years ago, we started using programming language constructs, either from Ruby or HCL or other, I would say, branches of philosophical stand on what is declarative, what is imperative, and all those things. And I think that became a big thread into how a practitioner would think about, I would say, encoding the intent in a repeatable, scalable manner with the flexibility that you need for large deployments. Now, I believe what has happened is practitioners are getting, I would say, striated into different levels. You have people who are deciding the deployment topology architecture. You have people who decide what needs to happen at what level of the stack. And they do an initial implementation, and they do the, maybe on the maturity curve, they do the first few steps. And then you have practitioners who say that, I am taking over managing this particular network or systems, and it is more business as usual than as pre-day one. And they need a different set of tools. They need audits. They need control. They need repeatability, and they need guardrails, right? So more and more what we see is that practitioners are of two or three types. One is what you typically call as a scout or a new person who is doing a lot of heavy lifting and establishing norms and processes. They need all the flexibility and all the power that you would have through YAML files and recipes and cookbooks with ability to edit and do everything. Then you need a set of people whom we call as town planners, who are tech champions who decide how a deployment should look at scale. And they also encode a company's security policies or a CISO's view of the world into the systems. And then you need people who are doing day-to-day work where they look at, I would say, alerts and data that we get and decide what is worth acting upon and what is maybe not worth acting upon. And they would prefer ClickOps and UI more than many of the other practitioners will need. So the world of practitioners is becoming more mature, and different streams are getting established. And the products that we typically build or work with have to have a point of view on what is the practitioner you are appealing to, what is the use case of that practitioner, and are you fulfilling the needs of that particular type of practitioner?
Got it. And as things scale, sounds like you started mentioning the concepts of guardrails and audit. And maybe if I zoom out, I'll just call all of those concepts additional or enhanced governance. Do you think there is a need for better and enhanced governance today compared to, let's say, a decade ago? And if so, why? Where is that need coming from?
I think it seems like you have read my mind at some level. This is what I do on a regular basis. The type of customers that...
That's what I'm known for, reading other people's minds.
It's a useful... So the type of customers we have, I would say you can segregate them into different buckets, right? There are typically the technology enthusiasts who typically work in... companies where you go fast and you need to get outcomes done quickly. Then you typically have companies who operate at scale and they are in a regulated industry. You can take financial services, you can take healthcare companies and pharma companies and situations like that. And then you have, I would say, technology adopters who say that I'm working in a retail company or in a QSR setup, and I need to do this at scale with minimum cost and people. So I think that the middle set of people, the second bucket that I mentioned, who operate in a regulated industry, who have needs where they need to show compliance audit, are driving the kind of demand that you talk about. So for example, if I am working in a globally distributed financial services company, I have CIS benchmark profiles to adhere to because that's what my industry has signed up for, right? Or I may have data residency rules or GDPR related work that I need to do. And creating that compliance and helping in security is a big part of where we see requirements come in. And that helps us both satisfy the compliance part, but that helps us in security as well. So that at the base involves configuration management. It involves identification of drift. It involves remediation, but being compliant with the compliance, which is the rule of the land or the law of the land where that company operates in. I think that area has mushroomed a lot in the last 5 years. I think as cyber security has become a much more important aspect of all of our lives. And that has driven a lot of new innovation and work for many of our tools.
So you talked about two approaches in, let's say, more flexible companies to talk about the velocity, the speed, the productivity of their teams, whereas the more regulated companies care deeply about their governance and compliance. And it seems like the real challenge is how you combine both self-service productivity while still, maintaining enterprise level governance. How do you see those companies in their journey to combine those two? Do you think they tend more to, if we need to be regulated, we will focus on that, and if everybody else needs to be slow, as long as we are regulated, that's okay? Or do they really try to do their important role in securing their production environments and ensuring the governance and compliance, and they find, let's say, dynamic and creative ways for their developers and their teams to ship software fast?
So I think you have hit the nail on the head, right? In the first set of companies, let's just call them strong growth companies, and the second is, let's call them regulated companies. In the strong growth companies, I think the main struggle is to keep up with that growth and provide the framework for the main outcomes to happen. And if you take an example like Facebook, where Chef is used to deploy image, a large part of their infrastructure, both on end user as well as on the server side, there the kind of scale and flexibility you need means that you need to support many different scenarios and topologies, and that means that you have to innovate on that product very aggressively to continue supporting such customers, right? I think the same is true for companies like Twitch or Uber and some others who use Chef. Then on the other side, if you take a financial services company, and of course, Chef is used by almost every credit card processor and many large financial services companies, the need for speed still exists, but it is manifested in a different way. When a CIS benchmark changes, how quickly can you provide content, premium content or recipes or cookbooks, which get you in compliance with the new CIS benchmark or STIG profile, is the area where you innovate. How do you create that cookbook? Where do you use different tools to do that is more important than the underlying environment itself changing fast. The underlying environment generally doesn't change as fast in a more regulated entity and a more regulated company, but the requirements and the provisions under which that company operates in that country change, and they change fast. And especially if you take, let's say, the top 20 economies of the world, each of them seem to have their own flavor. And for example, Chef is used by the top three banks in Australia and New Zealand, as well as Singapore, as well as in South Africa, for example. And the underlying environment in many ways is common, but the last 20%, which is different, means that we end up doing specific things for that customer. So the push to do innovation at speed is there in both the buckets. It's just different.
Yep, yep. And back to what you said previously, you've mentioned the concept of drifts. I've heard the term drifts in different meanings. Can you refer to what you see when you talk about drifts and how that affects the ability of the organization to ship software?
Yep. So I think a large part of our customer base is not fully in ephemeral cloud world. There are, I would say for almost every large customer, there is a set of assets or nodes which are in ephemeral cloud world, where if a drift happens, you blow out that ME or instance and you could recreate it. But there are also a large part of the customer base where, let's say, you have a SQL Server installed and that machine has been running for many years, and you may have to figure out when a drift happens from a particular benchmark profile that you had benchmarked it against, say, last quarter. For example, through Chef Inspect, a lot of our customers look for drift even multiple times a day, in most customers, at least once a day. When a drift happens, how do you bubble that up? How do you say if that drift is acceptable or not acceptable? Is that drift because a library that was installed on that, say, infrastructure is now having a known CVE, and that is why that is not an acceptable drift? And how long are you ready to wait to change that, right? In many companies, you want automated remediation of a drift. But in many companies, what you want is the drift should be identified, prioritized, and you want to create something in either ServiceNow or something like that, where the other stakeholders say that either I'm ready to live with this for a week or 10 days, or I need to get this done quickly. So that is a big piece of what you need in companies with large deployments. Automated drift detection is almost table stakes. Automated remediation is required only in few situations, and many companies are not ready to go for automated remediation, whereas they would like to know the details of the drift, understand the underlying causes, and then you want a human in the loop to make that decision. And after the human has made that decision, how do you patch it and how do you get it done at scale is another large job orchestration work that we in Chef are doing and focusing a lot on in a recent basis, I would say.
This is super interesting. Usually I don't talk much about N of Zero in this podcast. I try to make it more agnostic and neutral. But I have to say a few things about a recent release in N of Zero just a few days ago. We call it Drift Cause. And it allows you not just to detect that the drift happened and what is the drift, but what caused the drift. Let's say Sundar changed something 3 days ago from this source IP, and this is the actual change. So that's something that we constantly hear from our customers as well. We want to be notified about drifts. We want to understand what exactly happened. And the next thing that we are building is to help them remediate those drifts. By the way, you've mentioned manually. I think definitely sometimes the approval of the remediation will be manual. But if, let's say, you see that 90% of the drifts in this cloud account or in this application are caused from the same reason, and you find yourself approving over and over again the same kind of remediation, so let's probably automate this 90% of those drifts to be automatically remediated autonomously, quickly, without any human intervention. What we've seen in approval workflows, we've seen four types of potential next step. One is to approve something. The other is to deny something. The third is to send it pending, to send it for somebody else to take a look and potentially approve. And the fourth thing, we call it warning. We mark something that it's okay now, it's approved now, but please take another look later on and make a further decision whether something else is needed. But for now, I'm just going to approve it and not to block anything. So maybe in the sense of drift remediation, these kind of concepts, use cases, you mentioned ServiceNow is a potential concept or a tool within this decision-making process. So I think we are all facing more and more drifts and the ability to detect and then to remediate. And I think it's going to be super interesting to see how much of that remediation is being done automatically, how much of this is being done with the help of AI, and how much it's still going to be manual with the human validation. What are your thoughts about the things I've just said?
I fully agree with you. We see the same thing. I would go one or two steps further and say that in some situations, where we are providing the artifacts that are required for cyber insurance. So when a company takes cyber insurance, they need to show the state of their systems and how much is in compliance by which benchmark. There is also that angle that how long are you allowed to be out of drift before that artifact flags to your cyber insurance provider. And then we look at scoring as well and say that if you have these particular drifts, maybe it is acceptable if you do these things by this time, right? And then the interesting thing is also the act of remediation. For example, if you have a log4j libraries or a JRE, which you don't want in your system, and you have, let's say, tens of thousands of systems where you need to update, just doing the updates in a really intelligent manner where you start with 1% update, see the success of that, then do rolling updates, but also look at scenarios where, let's say, somebody shuts down their laptop or they are in a plane, they come back and connect. What do you look at situations like that? I think measuring drift, understanding the drift as per the policy of the company, and then correcting that drift with human in the loop or without, and doing it in, I would say, true green, blue-green deployment if you had a production system update, is the complexity that a large company faces. And we make software to help that through something called as Chef Courier. We have launched that. We have that in a couple of our customers using that. And that is an interesting software because we also actually store the state of the node and we track the state of the node as things happen, right? And that goes back to the philosophical question of how much do you spend energy in storing the state of the node, or do you just think about pre and post conditions and the actions you do and things like that? And choices like that have a big impact when you need to do it at scale.
Super interesting. I think we can talk a lot more about the challenges of infrastructure management. Sounds like you have a lot of experience, both as being a practitioner and also seeing so many different customers facing these challenges. So maybe we'll have a follow-up interview or a podcast. But for now, Sundar, I would like to deeply thank you for your time today, sharing your thoughts. It has been super interesting and amazing. So thank you so much. And thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode today. Thank you.
Thank you. And happy to do this.